Well, I think it's a wonderful privilege and it's a very great delight. The Pope was here in September 2010 during his state visit to the United Kingdom, and he visited the Abbey and we prayed together at the grave of the unknown warrior. We had a great ecumenical service, the choir sang, and then the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Pope, who'd both given addresses, prayed together at the shrine of St. Edward the Confessor. So the Pope has experience of the choir here, and he was very warm about the sound and the experience. So I suppose, in a way, this is genuinely connected to that very gracious and, I think, significant moment.
Was this invitation, though, expected? Had you got some hint that it was in the pipeline?
Well, in fact, last March, the Archabbot of Monte Cassino had approached us about lighting the Benedictine torch, which would be taken to Monte Cassino for the feast of the anniversary of the death of St. Benedict. And this was the first time that there'd been an approach to an Anglican church to light the torch. And I suspect that, that was itself related to the papal visit here in the previous September. So I lit the torch and blessed it, and then it went to the Vatican and then on to Monte Cassino, and I followed it and was there when it arrived at Monte Cassino and was very moved by the very warm reception which the Archabbot of Monte Cassino gave me. And in a sense, this has arisen as a result of that developing relationship. He joined us here in October last year for the feast of the translation of St. Edward the Confessor. And there was a suggestion that we might bring the choir to Monte Cassino to sing. I thought, well, if we're coming to Monte Cassino, we ought to sing in Rome and see if we can manage one or two occasions. And I wrote rather tentatively, wondering whether the Pope would allow us to sing for him in the Sistine Chapel. And this is a far richer and warmer invitation than we had ever imagined, not to sing in the Sistine Chapel on a private occasion, but to sing with the Sistine Chapel Choir in the two papal basilicas, St. Paul's and then for Vespers and then St. Peter's, on the day, the feast of St. Peter and St. Paul. And it's a marvelous ecumenical gesture, which we're enormously grateful for and very happy to answer.
I know the boys in the Westminster Abbey Choir travel extensively abroad for concerts and tours, so they're used to this, if you like. But what was their reaction to the news that they would be singing in the presence of the Pope in Rome?
Well, of course, they sang in the presence of the Pope in Westminster in September. And in fact, the boys and the men of the Abbey Choir don't tour very often. Their task is to sing the daily offices and the Eucharist on Sundays here in Westminster Abbey, and they do that in our daily round of worship here. And of course, there are many occasions at which they sing which are of enormously high profile, such as the wedding of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge last April. So they're trained to take things in their stride and perform as well as they possibly can. But we're all extremely pleased to be coming to Rome and will enjoy very much the experience of singing with the Sistine Chapel Choir. And they're coming here indeed for a rehearsal so that they practice with our choir in May. One of the most remarkable things about this invitation is that the Sistine Chapel Choir has never ever sung before with any other choir. And the Pope, I understand, was personally explicit with the maestro direttore of the Sistine Chapel Choir that the two choirs should form one choir and sing together, but also that he wanted to hear in particular some English Anglican music, some English music from the Anglican tradition, sung by the Westminster Abbey Choir at the beginning and end of the services. And I think that is what will happen. So it will be remarkable, unprecedented, and I believe a marvelous statement of friendship in the gospel and journeying together on the road.
And do you know already what music in particular from the English choral tradition might be included amongst what they will sing?
That's not been decided yet, but there is a very great wealth of English music. The choir here sings a great variety of music. There will obviously be Palestrina and so on during the papal mass, and our choir sings a lot of 16th and 17th century music, much Latin music, obviously Palestrina, Victoria, many others, as well as the great English composers of that era, Byrd and Tallis, and a bit later Gibbons and Purcell, some of which are certainly Byrd and Tallis in Latin, as well as the later English. And there was a great deal of wonderful 18th, 19th, 20th century music which is in the choir's repertoire. So there's a great deal to choose from. And I think it will be that James O'Donnell, who's the master of the choristers and organist of Westminster Abbey, will will have great difficulty choosing what to sing, in fact.
So you see this as a mutual exchange of gifts. I mean, what do you think that the choir can learn from the repertory of the Sistine Chapel Choir?
Well, we're constantly learning here from each other's traditions. Certainly, we richly value here the great Latin tradition of music, both plain song and the complex polyphony, which is frequently sung by the Sistine Chapel Choir. So we receive very strongly from that tradition and celebrate it. And one of the things which I'm really very pleased about is that this is a symbolic way of giving substance to what I think the Holy Father was clear about when he visited here in September 2010. At the end of his visit, speaking to the bishops, he spoke about receiving from other traditions. And this is a sign of an ecumenism in which there is mutual exchange. And we all recognize that the issues between us, the things that divide us, but what unites us in our common baptism, in our common fidelity to our Lord Jesus Christ, in the gospel that we share, and in many, many other traditions of worship, is far greater than what divides us. And we hold very strongly to our Lord's wish and his prayer that they may be one. And I'm confident that for the Pope, as for the Archbishop of Canterbury and others, for us here, the aim of the full reconciliation of Christendom is one which may not look easily achieved, but nevertheless one for which we faithfully and determinedly and doggedly need to strive. And in God's good time, it will come about. But in the meantime, the growing friendship and relationship and journeying together, dialogue of life, is a very great enrichment for us all.